that stupid punk rock. I don't, you know, I just think of it as rock and roll, because that's what it is.
Neighbors.
No one loves you like he loves you.
You want a ghost broom with that?
Sunday, back in black.
Your answer is non-sequitur.
This is Stan Mueller.
Hey, what's up? This is Jeff Fearhicken, and this is another episode of the Punk Rock Chronicles podcast, where we talk things all punk rock with the people who live it. Now, our guest today is the one, the only, Sammy Town, singer of the band Fang. Now, Fang has been around since the 80s, one of the very first like hardcore punk rock bands to come out. And we're very lucky to have this guy in the studio today.
Oh, thanks for thanks for bringing me in. I appreciate it.
So let's go all the way back to the beginning. Let's talk about, like, what was your first experience with punk rock music?
My first experience with punk rock music, when I was a kid, my father was a teacher at UC Berkeley. And so he took sabbatical and we moved to the UK when I was 12. So that was 77.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so we were living in Guildford. So we were living in a tiny town, not Guildford, I'm sorry. We were living in a tiny town that was in the south of Wales, and I was going to school, and there was a kid there that I became friends with. He was actually an English kid, and all the Welsh kids hated him because he was English. Everybody hated the English.
So English and Welsh people don't get along.
Well, I think if you are in the UK, everybody hates the English. Like, if you're Irish, you hate the English. If you're Welsh, you hate the English.
I didn't know that.
So we were both kind of outsiders, me and this kid, you know, because I was an American kid. So we hung out, and we went over to his house after school one day, and he had just got this new record, and it was the Sex Pistols, never mind the Bullocks. And he's like, you got to check this out. He was super excited about it. And so he put that record on, and that was it.
That changed everything.
You know, it changed everything listening to that, because I grew up in the East Bay. We listened to, and I still listen to, R&B, soul, disco at that time.
What kind of R&B and soul do you listen to?
Well, Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh, hell yeah,
back then, anything. I mean, Rick James, I love Rick James, although Rick James was, that was a little later, but there was a lot of disco was happening at the time. I mean, the Bee Gees.
You're a Bee Gees fan.
I was a Bee Gees fan.
Really? The lead singer Fang was a Bee Gees fan. Who knew?
I think we all were, right? Yeah.
Probably not.
But, don't lie. You know you were a fan. Yeah. Don't lie.
But, R&B was huge in Oakland. It was huge in the Bay Area. It was on the radio. That's what we listened to.
Yeah.
But then I heard the Sex Pistols, and it was a game changer. Everything changed for me, because I think I felt, especially at that point, living over there, like an outsider already.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
And that sort of solidified it. And then we moved to London, and I look back on it now, and it's kind of bizarre, because my parents, I got an underground pass, and I would leave the apartment we were living in, at like 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and I would just go roam, with my subway, the underground pass.
Just exploring.
Just exploring London, 12, by myself. 12, wow. I turned 13 while I was there. And I met, in the subway stations, there's punk rock kids. Well, they weren't really kids. I think they were kids, but they were a lot older than I was. These mm-hmm. were like teenagers, 17, 18, 19. And
to a 12-year-old, that's like an old guy.
You're about to die probably. And they were punk rockers, and they were drug addicts, and they were living in the subways, and some of them were living on the streets and in squats, And so, so that was my first sort of taste. And they were all, mm-hmm. they all, for whatever reason, were, they would take me under their wing. They would like, yeah, come on, let's hang out.
Wow, that's cool.
Were you able to experience any shows?
Or? I didn't go to any shows at that time, and I came back, and it took a while before I actually did go to shows. Finally, a while, felt like forever. The Sex Pistols came and played in San Francisco, and so that was the first I snuck out the house.
Do you remember what venue that was at?
And Winterland.
Oh, okay.
In San Francisco, and there was bands that played, but when I got to that show, I was still a little kid, it was a game. You know, I walked up and people just, because I think I was so young too. People like, come on, kid, you know, come with us, you know. And we did that back then too. You know, if you were at a show and you saw like some shy or, you know, weird kid kind of hanging on the fridge, like, come here, you know, come kick it with us, you know, what are you doing, you know?
It was like the outsiders kind of forming their own like little group of outsiders together.
And that was definitely the way punk rock was for me in the Bay Area, you know, back then, you know, that we were a group of outsiders that that hung tight together. I think a lot of that was really exacerbated by the fact that you were a target. You know, if you walked down the street in 79, 80, you know, up into, you know, probably the mid 80s at least, and you walked around with a mohawk or you had colored hair or, you know, you were obviously identifiable, you were a target.
Yeah.
You were gonna have to deal with people on the street that wanted to assault you, you know, either verbally or physically, you know. And so I think that made the scene really tight at that time, you know.
Sure.
You know, that because you all had to have each other's back, because you literally were walking down the street and at any moment somebody could, you know, throw something out of a car at you, yell at you, try and jump you, you know. And so I think that made the scene really tight, you know. And I think I think when that aspect of it changed, I think it changed the scene too. You know, when it wasn't dangerous just to be a punk rocker, I think that was the beginning of where things started to really change. You know, that I think before the scene was so tight, and it was such a decision and a choice that you made to look this way and dress this way and be this way.
Right.
You know, because it
meant more back then, because it was more of a risk.
It was dangerous. Yeah. It really was, you know.
Yeah.
And so you're like a freshman going to see the Sex Pistols, right?
I was a little crazy kid that, and it was actually even before I was a freshman, right before. And then I started going to shows in San Francisco. They had the Deaf Club, which was literally a club for deaf people. Was one of the only places that they would have shows.
Wait, that doesn't make sense.
I think
this music's good. These guys, I think they're good.
No place else would let punk rockers play there.
Wait, to play for the deaf.
Was part of it.
So basically, you got your start playing for deaf people. They loved us.
There was some other clubs, but the Deaf Club, they was one of the, you know, earlier ones. And then the Mubuhay Gardens, the Sound of Music was a super gnarly dive bar in the Tenderloin, that started doing shows. And then Paul Ratt came along and he started doing bigger shows too, where he did hall shows like 10th Street Hall, California Hall. Wes Robinson came along and he started doing hall shows too. The Fillmore, which was Winterland, that it had closed down and it was this empty building.
Yeah.
And so they started, Wes Robinson, who was a promoter from Oakland, he would rent it out, and he started doing bigger punk rock shows there.
Okay.
You know, you have bills where, you know, like 8-10 bands, and the whole building was kind of fucked off and falling apart. You know, it was perfect. You know, and there were no there were no rules. You know, it was total, you know, total shit show. It was a lot of booze, a lot of drugs.
Yeah,
a lot of teenage angst and sex, and you know, and a lot of fights. You know, and It was great, and a lot of really great music that was happening at that time.
Did you spend time in the Vats?
Sure. Yeah. I never lived there, spent a lot of time there, had a lot of friends that lived there. So he's talking about the Hams Brewery in San Francisco was closed, and they converted it into living spaces, if you could call it living. You know, they like had these huge round
living
like
spaces,
buildings, you know, or round holes where they had brewed beer. The whole place reeked of like rotten beer.
Oh man.
And all these punk rockers were living there and renting out spaces, and bands practice there. It was a whole hive scene unto itself, the Vats. And
that's
the
crazy. Yeah, it was called the Vats. Okay. Yeah.
And they had shows there. There was like even some I know there's pictures, but there may even be some old live video. I think it was us and maybe Crucifix and some other band. But there was a lot of shows there.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and a lot of people lived there. I think Dave Dichter was living in the Vats for a while. Nikki Sicky was living in the Vats for a while. There was a hive mind there, you know.
Right.
And fine, you know. But it was, you know, a degenerate, fucked up, you know, like sure. I said, reeked of rotting
beer. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But no place else.
And
I'm
we
sure.
loved it, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
So you were like had been into punk rock, were this outsider, had been going to all these punk rock shows. What was like the moment when you decided that you wanted to like be in a band, like be a musician for punk rock?
Well, the first band I was ever in was a band called Reign of Terror. Okay. And that was a garage band, you know. Mm-hmm. We practiced, that was while I was still living at home. I think I was 13 or maybe 14. And it was with Turner Babcock, who later went on to be in Special Forces. I don't know if you remember Special Forces. They were another East Bay band. Me and Turner and David and this kid Matt on drums, and we practiced at my mother's house, and I played bass for that band.
Okay.
I didn't sing.
You didn't sing, just played bass.
I just played bass.
Okay.
And we were horrible, you know, but
punk rock.
Yeah, we didn't know, we didn't know how to play our instruments really. And
it's punk. That's not important.
Right. And we actually, but we had it together. We never played a live show, but we did do a songbook. We actually had a set, you know, and we made our own songbook, you know, old school, like Xerox style, you know.
Really?
And I think Johnny Puke might still have one, but we made our own.
It just had like the lyrics to all the songs in there.
Yeah,
had
lyrics, and then we cut out pictures, you know, and, you know, did old school graphics in it, you know, to correspond with the lyrics.
So it's kind of like early like punk rock scrapbooking kind of.
Yeah. Like something like that. Yeah. And we made our own shirts, you know.
Okay.
We did, you know, cut stencils, you know, and spray painted, you know.
Sick.
Spray painted. We had swag.
You know? Yeah, you had merch, but never played
merch.
Any shows.
Yeah, we never played a show, but we had merch. So I don't even know how long that band existed, because when you're 13, 14, like 6 months feels like a decade.
Right.
You know, so I don't even know how long we played. But after, there was a band that was put together by a couple guys I knew called Shut Up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guitarist and a bass player. And they went to my high school, but they weren't really punk rockers. And they were a couple years older.
Okay.
But they listened to the music, you know, and so they put this punk rock band together. With Greg Langston was the drummer. Greg played in No Alternative. He played in Beast. I don't know. That was Brian Gregory's side band. And
okay.
He's still a punk rock drummer to this day. He played on one of Fang's later albums, American Nightmare.
Nice.
He's been playing forever. But they brought me in. They asked me if I wanted to sing for Shut
Up. Had you sung before?
No.
This?
No. Uh-huh. And so, but I think they liked me because I was young. I had a really horrible attitude. I was fucked up, and I was
perfect.
You know,
yeah.
So I started singing for Shut Up, and we did play our first show. Well, actually,
did you have a scrapbook?
We didn't have a scrapbook, and as far as I remember, we also didn't have merch. I don't think we did Shut Up merch, but we did play. We played at the Sound of Music, which is the first live show I ever played, and I was 14, I think. Nice. And this was a dive bar in San Francisco, and
damn.
It was like in a super in the Tenderloin, super gnarly neighborhood, you know. And there was a lot of punk rock shows. It was 21 and over even back then, you know, because the drinking age was 21 in California.
But they still let you into play.
And so, well, they'd let you into play, but there was a parking lot next to it, and there was a back door, and so all, you know, when they'd have shows, we'd all hang out in the parking lot and try and sneak in the back door. And you could sit backstage, but you had to run across the stage to actually be inside the bar. So most of the kids would hang out either out in the parking lot or backstage, and every once in a while you'd dare to run across the stage.
Some kid running across the stage.
Yeah, and then they would come and they'd say, "Get the fuck out of here, kid." You know, they'd throw us out. But that was the first.
But you played there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we played there. My first live punk rock show in Shut Up was at the Sound of Music.
You remember that show at all? Like,
a little, vaguely, you know. I mean,
it wasn't that long ago. Come on.
Yeah. So that band didn't last. Like I said, I think that was our only live show, mm-hmm. and that band didn't last long. And so it was a while. I don't know how long it was before I joined Fang after Shut Up fell apart, but Fang had existed as a two-piece sort of noise band in Connecticut with Tom Flynn and this guy Brian.
Yeah, they had like that single that came out before you were in the band, right?
Fang,
yeah,
and so they both graduated high school, and Brian went to college in Texas, and Tom went to college in Chicago. But after 3 weeks, he's like, "Fuck that! I'm going to California." So he moved to California. He moved to Berkeley, and he restarted Fang in Berkeley. And so he first got Chris Wilson on bass, and then he had this guy Chris on, this other dude Chris on drums. And they started as a three-piece, and they played a few shows, but then they kicked the drummer out, or he quit, and they were looking for a new drummer. And so Joel Fox, who was at that time, he was my best friend, we ran together, he went to try out for Fang. Mm-hmm. And so I went with him because we just rolled everywhere. And so we tried out for Fang, and they're like, "Yeah, we want you to play." He had played in a band called Subsidized Mess mm-hmm. before, with pretty much all the guys in Crucifix, before Crucifix.
Oh, okay.
And
cool.
So when Subsidized Mess broke up, Joel was looking for another band. He started playing drums in Fang. And when he tried out, I went up to Tom and I said, "You guys need a lead singer." And Tom's like, "Yeah, I've been thinking about it." So he's like, "Well, do you know anybody?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll do it." You know, and he's like, "Okay, come back."
Shut Up.
Said, "Come back next week." Yeah, I was in Shut Up. You didn't hear about us.
We played a show.
So yeah, so I came back the next week and then just started singing for him.
Nice.
And so the rest is history.
Yeah. So okay, about the songs. Like, were you the primary songwriter as far as the lyrics?
Well, a lot of the songs when I joined early, they had already. Tom had written, you know, some of the mm-hmm. Fang songs were already written.
Okay.
You know, but then after after I joined, I wrote all the lyrics after I joined. So we still did some of the old songs, which Tom had written the lyrics for.
Mm-hmm.
But like Landshark, well, there's even a couple songs on Where the Wild Things Are that he had written the lyrics for, but they were older Fang songs.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and so, but once
so
I
with
joined,
Landshark was like mainly hit the songs that he had written?
I would say maybe half and half.
Okay.
I guess, you know, he wrote the lyrics for The Money Will Ride In, and Chris Wilson, the bass player, wrote the music for The Money Will Ride In, which is the song everybody knows.
Yeah, of course, right.
What else was on there? And then, I can't remember. I think most everything else on that record I wrote the lyrics for, like Skinhead Smoke Dope and mm-hmm. Landshark and mm-hmm. Invitation, Diary of a Mad Werewolf, I wrote the lyrics for. So most of the songs I wrote the lyrics for, I guess on that record. He wrote Fun with Acid.
Okay.
Yeah, and that came out on the Not So Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
He wrote, and which was kind of ironic in a lot of ways, because when I was 15, I was jumped into an acid family, you know, and I started dealing acid when I was, you know, 15 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fairly large criminal organization in Northern California that dealt millions and millions of dollars in acid.
Wow.
At that time, they probably supplied, I would imagine, at least 20% of the U.S.'s acid. It was coming from Northern California.
Oh, wow.
The Grateful Dead loved you guys.
Yeah, well, I hate the Grateful Dead. But I was at
There are no Bee Gees.
Now, the Bee Gees, that's one thing, but the Dead, I spent a lot of time at Grateful Dead shows dealing.
Yeah.
And this was as a kid, you know.
Okay.
Like I was 15 years old. I was given a gun and, you know.
Oh, at 15 years old, you were carrying around.
I was given
a gun
and, like, one of my jobs, I had to guard a house because it had been robbed, you know. And so so the irony about Fun with Acid was that was my career for a long time. And so nobody even would believe that that song wasn't written by me, you know, because
yeah,
everybody
that's crazy.
Knew me
wow.
being so involved in the acid, you know, in the acid trade.
Yeah.
You know, that
that sounds like it must have been a crazy time.
It was good times. It was crazy. It was
what do you say it was fun times?
It was fun with acid. It was absolutely yeah, fun with acid. We made a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there are different people have even back then there were different, you know, we all ran very tight together like punk rockers, mm-hmm. but there were sort of different ideas on punk rock, you know. You had the more political side of punk rock, yeah. and then you had the more criminal side mm-hmm. of punk rock, you mm-hmm. know, the more nihilistic fuck you, you know.
Yeah.
And I was much farther on the
on
nihilistic fuck you criminal side of punk rock.
Uh-huh.
You know, that unlike some of my contemporaries that were, you know,
sure.
You know, I mean, like the two bands that came out of, you know, the East Bay that at that time that toured were Crucifix and Fang,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so, and they were, we were, you know, we were all friends, we all knew each other, but there was, we were polar opposites as far as sort of where, you know, they
ideologies.
Were on the Crass label and we were on the like Get Fucked Up and Steal Shit label.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, so to speak.
Was that a label?
No, but it should
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, Boner Records, AKA, you know.
Criminal activity.
Okay. Well, I think that was more me, but than the label, but you know.
Right, right. Your nickname, where does it come from?
So there was a core group of bands that we all ran together and you know, starting, I don't know, 83, 84, Tales of Terror from Sacramento
mm-hmm.
and Code of Honor from San Francisco and Fang from Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very much a family, those three bands, you know, we all ran really hard together.
Okay.
So I Tales of Terror played in San Francisco, I think at the On Broadway, I don't even remember, because it was, we, you know, if any of us played, we were all there. We all ran together. But this particular night, I'd given everybody a bunch of acid, and everyone was super high on acid. And so we left the San Francisco, and we're driving back to Tripp's house in Berkeley. Tripp is a guitar player for Tales of Terror. And he lived in Berkeley. The rest of the guys lived in Sacramento. But we're driving back to Tripp's house to go party. And we kind of got, like, off on the wrong street. And then we're driving down Broadway Street in Oakland. And at that time, Broadway in Oakland was the Hostro. You know, and so we're driving down Broadway. And everyone's super fucked up. I'm drunk, you know, more than high. You know, mm-hmm. I'm pretty wasted. And they start seeing all these hookers. And we're driving by, and they're seeing all these hookers. And so, and they're yelling at them, you know, because they're all fucked up on acid and
yeah,
drunk,
yeah.
you know, and I'm like, and I see these two, you know, streetwalkers walking us, and I'm like, hey, stop. They're like, what? I'm like, stop the van. They stop them, and I'm like, Shelly. And it was this hooker, Shelly, and her friend, and so, and these guys, you know, those guys in Tales of Terror. Like,
oh, you did know this?
Yeah, no,
oh.
I knew them.
Oh,
they were friends of mine.
I thought it was just a coincidence.
No,
she's like, my name
just,
is Shelly,
no,
actually.
Two hookers that I knew, they
oh,
were,
wow.
and so, yeah. so Tales of Terror, like, what? You know, they were kind of, they were maybe a little not quite as street wise at that time
okay.
as I was, you know.
Sure.
So they were kind of blown away that I knew these hookers. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, and like, ah, it's dead out here, fuck this. I'm like, well, come on, jump in the van, let's go, you know. And like, well, God, you got, you know, I'm like, where are you going? I'm like, well, we were gonna go back to our apartment. And they actually had their shit together for hookers, you know. They had an
they
apartment.
Had an apartment. Yeah.
So we all have them jump in the van, and so us and the hookers go back to their apartment, and Tales of Terror like, ah, take your clothes off, and so they're, you know, they're taking their clothes off, and we're all partying, but me and the hookers had pulled aside, and they want to get some heroin, you know, and so I threw some money in, and they called their dealer, so mm-hmm. we're waiting on some heroin, and I pass out, and so, you know, I don't know, maybe half an hour later. You know, they're like half naked at this time, and you know, dancing around the house with Tales of Terror, and these guys are like, you know, their minds are blown. You know,
yeah, frying on acid,
and,
yeah, right.
yeah, frying on acid, and there's naked hookers dancing around the apartment that they just fucking like jumped in the van off the street, you know,
oh,
and
yeah.
and so then the dope man shows up, And so this is the other thing that's about this whole story in retrospect that's ironic. So they bounce off and they're cooking up some heroin. Well, they were actually, even though I was passed out, they broke mine off, you know, and so they were cooking up a shot of heroin. So somebody comes in the bedroom and they're trying to like wake me up and they're going to like shoot me up while I'm passed out. So then Tales of Terror gets all freaked out. They think, because they're all fucked up on us, they're like, oh my God, they're trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Right? So then they're screaming and they like are pulling the rigs out and they're fucking running around. They're like grabbing me, like carrying me out, yelling at the hookers and throwing me in the van. We go back to Tripp's house and, you know, and party the rest of the night. But so Tales of Terror then started calling Oakland Sammy's Town. You know, because they would come down there and I'd get them fucked up on acid and have some weird, crazy experience.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, okay, like for a good time, you know, go to Sammy's Town, you know. And so it over time, then they just shortened it and just started calling me Sammy Town.
Sammy Town.
Yeah, nice. That was how, that's it. How it all started.
So that's how you got the nickname.
That's how I got the nickname. You know, it's just Oakland. You know,
I thought you were going to say like, oh, I just live in a place and we called it Sammy Town. I was not expecting
I live in Sammy Town.
I was not expecting a story about like hookers and heroin and stuff. So.
Yeah, a lot of acid and Tales of Terror.
Asking you, Sharice.
What were the shows like, though? Like, you say, after your first album, how were the shows like? Who did you guys play with a lot? And
I mean, the scene was a lot smaller back then. So, I mean, we played with, you know, everybody played with everybody, you know. I mean, I don't know. There are few old school punk rock bands that at some point we didn't play together. You know, some of the East Coast bands that never got to California, but we also toured a lot. You know, we started touring pretty early. Like as soon as Landshark came out, we were on the road. So, I mean, there was so many incredible bands that were happening and so few rules, and it was sketchy and, you know, fucked up, fly by night. We would, I was just talking to somebody who was from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we came through there and played a place called the Crystal Pistol, which was an old, you know, punk rock club. If you're really old and you're from Tulsa, then you probably remember that place. But at the time, the drinking age in Oklahoma was 18. But I was 16, and so they wouldn't let me in the club. But they did. I came in and I could play the show, and then I had to go sit in the van. And so that was not uncommon back then.
Oh man, I remember those days.
Right, you know. But I mean, the Southern California. I mean, you know, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Adolescence, Social Distortion. All those bands would come up north. You know, and we'd come down here, you know, to Suicidal Tendencies, up north, you know, Dead Kennedys,
Hell yeah.
It's just, you know, Code of Honor, Tales of Terror, The Wounds, there was a, and in the East Bay, not right at first, but there was, it was one of the earliest crossover scenes that Ruthie's in, the same promoter that had the Elite Club that I was talking about, where he would do shows at Ruthie's Inn that were crossover shows, you know, like you'd have all the punk rockers go and hang out with Exodus, you know, and Slayer would come through and Metallica and all those, and we all party together. And
Metallica covers one of your guys' songs,
right,
now.
Metallica covers one of our songs. Cause we all hung out together.
Yeah.
I think in some scenes there was, from my understanding, there was, you know, there's like problems, like the punk rockers and metalheads fought. That was not the case in the East Bay or in the Bay Area. We all ran together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like testament. So, and
that
and
makes sense, because I think a lot of the same ideologies in punk exist in metal too. I mean, it's like a lot of outsiders just finding music that is a good way to like have an outlet to get like their express like their aggression.
Absolutely.
Get like their energy out. So it totally makes sense that the people would get along.
And we'd all like grown up together too.
Yeah.
You know, and so we, and I don't know why it was so different, but definitely in the East Bay, you know, there was a lot of crossover shows really early on that happened, you know, in the metal and the hardcore, you know, punk rock scene.
Gotcha. So we're kind of running out of time here, but do you want to talk about your incarceration at all?
Well, I went to prison for a long time. Do I want to talk about my incarceration? I would say that if I had to talk about my incarceration, it was, you know, I grew up in a culture. Later on, like I said, I got involved in dealing drugs. That's the end result often, you know, is violence and it, you know, I committed a horrible crime, and I went to prison for a long time for it. It certainly gave me a very different understanding of life on a lot of levels, and it's something that I still struggle with. It's something that I'll pay for the rest of my life, and it changed everything for me and for a lot of different people. I can't take back what I've done, but part of what I do now is to work with people to hopefully not make the same mistakes that I made back then.
Tell me about that.
So I work in drug treatment now. I've been working in drug treatment on various levels for, 6 or 7 years. Since I got clean, I definitely have tried to, you know, work with people and help them get clean. I definitely like working with younger men, you know, who get caught in an ideology, you know, and that ideology and the heroes that we have can definitely direct the road we're going to take in life, you know. And so I think a lot now, a lot of kids get caught up in an ideology and then they end up in the system and then they don't get out, you know, they just are stuck in that system, you know.
Yeah, you know, I commend that you are, like, you know, helping people out, you know, and they're trying to get people get sober, you know. You have a sober living home, is that correct?
I had a sober living home in Oakland for many years, and we finally closed, and then I moved down here, and I work in a residential detox called Transformations Care, and it's frontline, so people coming straight off the streets into and they detox there, so we have them for the first month, you know, and then hopefully help them find a, you know, transition to the next stage.
So if someone is interested in getting in contact with you about that, how can they find out about that?
You can look up Transformations Care. It's like transformation, www.transformationscare.com.
Cool. We'll put the link up in the show notes too,
yeah,
for people.
That'd be great. Yeah. You know, and we do a podcast talking about transformations.
What's it called?
It's called Transformations Recovery Podcast.
Okay.
And it's on all the platforms.
Awesome.
And you can, are the owner of the rehab, he does the interviews, and my girlfriend and I, we produce and edit them. There's a lot of punk rock in them.
Yeah?
You know? Yeah, we've got Farrell from Decry, Becky Reck from the Lunatics. We've got more people coming up, you know.
That's awesome, man.
You know, had some transformative situations in their lives.
Yeah, because it's all about those stories, man. When people hear that they have stories similar to theirs and that they have a happy ending, it gives them hope that they can...
Right, that you can, you know, and I think that there are a lot of people that, you know, I was a hardcore heroin addict for many, many years, and a lot of people say, well, if that idiot can get clean, then maybe
maybe
I can
there's
get
hope
clean.
There is, you know, hope. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Sammy Town did it, you know,
right,
I just can
then,
do it
then, yeah, that I'd gone to the depths that I went to, and I, you know, still able to dig myself back out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
We appreciate it, man.
What's going on with Fang right now, though? You guys are playing a lot. I always see you guys on flyers, and what's going on?
We try and play a bunch. We put out a record on Die Laughing Records, Rise Up. It came out last year.
It's a great record, by the way.
Thanks. Appreciate that. We put a lot of time into it. And
it's heavy.
Definitely we're really stoked on it. It's I think, one of the angriest Fang records.
I would agree.
You know, I think that is in sort of a direct reflection of society. I think right now, what's happening in America, everything's so polarized. It's very political. Yep. It's very much in a lot of ways like the 80s. And so
interesting.
I think that the record reflects that. It's definitely the angriest, hardest Fang record. But it was also, we put out a record Here Come the Cops in 2012.
It's also
and
a good record.
You know, and it had been a while since we put out a record, and I really knew the record I wanted to make when we started working on Rise Up, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so it took a long time to write it, and it's not a super long record, but I feel that it's maybe the only time I've ever really had a vision mm-hmm. as far as a musical vision, and then actually, you know, stuck to that vision and brought it to, you know, brought it to the end result. Rise Up came out, and we've been touring it. You know, we've just been trying to get out on the road and playing it. We went to Japan last year. That was our
Where'd you guys play in Japan?
We played 8 shows in Japan.
Wow.
Oh, so, damn.
I know, which is...
What, like Tokyo area?
Yeah, we played... you play a bunch in Tokyo.
Right, yeah.
And then we played Osaka, Kyoto, I can't remember. Yokohama. Japan was... That was crazy. The sickest tour I'd done in a long time.
Yeah.
The people there, the scene there is super tight. You know, people go fucking off. Nice. You know, that was a blast.
Yeah, they love definitely, American bands out there.
Definitely trying to get back to Japan later on this year. So we're going, hopefully, to Europe at the end of this year. And that's, Fang, we just try and tour.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even before I moved down to Long Beach, we only play in the Bay Area like two times a year, you know, because the scene up there, it's much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to play too much.
Yeah.
So we just try and get out on the road.
That's awesome.
And so we tour. At some point, hopefully in the next year, I'd like to start writing a follow-up album to Rise Up.
Okay.
You know, and I know that Die Laughing is definitely down with putting that up. They've been a great label for us.
Sweet.
So
who runs that label?
Dave Dalton.
Okay.
And he plays in the Screaming Bloody Marys. He was in a band Cell Block 5.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
He's old school punk rock. I've known him forever.
Awesome. Nice.
You know.
Well, Sammy, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thanks
this
for
has
having
been great
me.
Hearing all these stories. It's really cool having you on here. And if you guys want to check out the new Fang record, it's called Rise Up.
Rise Up on Die Laughing.
On
Records.
Die Laughing. Records.
Yeah. And if you're struggling with drug addiction or alcoholism, you can look up transformationscare.com on the internet. And if you want a shitty prison tattoo, you can find me on Facebook.
Oh, I want one.
Thank you, Fang, for showing up. We love this.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. You guys, my name is Jeff Eric, and you guys can find me on my social media stuff.
And I'm Stan Mueller, Punk Rock Chronicles.
If you guys like the podcast, make sure that you subscribe so you never miss an episode, and you can hear us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, basically wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to watch the videos, also make sure that you subscribe to our channel on YouTube so you always see our episodes. All right, guys, thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.